A very good afternoon. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 Fit Talmud. Yevamos Kuf Chaf, Yevamos 120a, pagination 239. We're in our final stretch of Yevamos, and we are dealing with cases of Aguna, where a woman is unsure if her husband, who disappeared, is truly dead. And we're looking for testimony and verification on his death, if indeed it occurred. So the Mishnah says, midway on the page, Ein me'idin, you're not allowed to say testimony, and it means we would not accept the testimony of a person unless they were saying as definitive as the Mishnah describes, Ela al partsuf panim, the face, im hachotem, with the nose. Even though you have signs that it must have been him, and the body that you see, it's got to be him because of signs in his body or on his clothing, his wallet, for example. The Mishnah begins over here that you have to actually have facial recognition. Now, there are a lot of things that are being taken into account with our concern that maybe the person you think is the husband is really not the husband. It's a different unfortunate death that is not going to free the wife of a different man. We're concerned, for example, that maybe the clothing that he's wearing is perhaps the exact same clothing that you remember the husband wearing, but maybe they traded clothing. Maybe he borrowed the clothing. And we are concerned of all kinds of possibilities until we can get a definitive reading and proof that it's indeed the husband. In Shulchan Aruch, it's brought that people wanted to prove because they husband had an excessively long arm, for example, or things like that, and the body in front of us appears similar. And as a general rule, long, short, and things like that are not legitimate proofs. It would have to be simen muvhak, an unusually definitive sign that would cause us to be able to say with clarity that it is the same person as the one we're looking for. Discussion in more recent tshuvas has to do with dental records, because if the dental work can be analyzed and matches the dentist's records of which teeth had fillings and what type of fillings, excuse me, then perhaps that can be considered simen muvhak, a definitive sign. The Mishnah tells us, Ein me'idim ela ad shetetze nafsho. One can only say testimony once the person is actually dead. Just because he was left for dead, so to speak, and they assumed that if that happens to that person, it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to die. He fell into a pit. He fell down a cliff. All kinds of situations that his fellow travelers might make assumptions are not necessarily going to be sufficient for us, because we know that perhaps things were opportune for him and he didn't necessarily die. Also, Ein me'idim ela ad gimel yamim. There's a time limit to how long you can say testimony on the person with clarity, because we're worried that the body became disfigured in some way, bloated or otherwise deteriorated in a way that the body cannot properly be identified. Very interesting story with Rabbi Arye Levin during one of the battles in Jerusalem at the time of Israel's independence. So after a particularly deadly attack, Rabbi Levin was seen with a camera in the morgue. And someone wondered, especially in a time when cameras were not so common, except for something special that you wanted to capture, usually a joyous moment, what was he walking around with a camera for? And Rabbi explained that he was taking pictures of the dead in case the Beis Din would later want that information with clarity, the facial recognition of the people that were killed. It should be identified and recorded in some way so that their wives shouldn't have the additional tragedy of being agunos. I'd like to mention a sinister but creative anecdote in the life of the Vilna Gaon, in which a man showed up into town and identified himself as the long-lost husband of a certain woman. This woman living in town had been married when she was young, and her husband disappeared for many, many years. And now this man shows up into town claiming that he's the long-lost husband. And the questions, similar to the cases of Aguna, are trying to figure out if this is really the husband. In this particular case, it's a twist, because the man claiming to be the husband is alive, but we're not sure that he's the husband. And he shows up to the woman and says things and knows things and has certain mannerisms that seem to identify him as the husband, but the woman says that she's just not sure. Her husband was gone for so long, and this man seems to be, might be, it doesn't quite sit right with her. She's not sure what to do, and likewise her father has his doubts that this is really his son-in-law. So they brought the case to the Vilna Gaon for advice. And the Vilna Gaon confided with them a strategy of how they could identify whether he's indeed the husband or not. And the Vilna Gaon's calculation was, what are we worried about? This man walks into town, he claims he's the husband. What are we worried about? We're worried that maybe he's a lowlife. He spent time with the real husband, who knows, maybe in a jail or wherever, drinking, wherever. And he got information from the husband with such clarity, he was able to really debrief him and milk him for the information to the point that he's able to make believe that he's the husband. Said the Gaon, if indeed this man is the lowlife that we're suspecting that he might be, there's one thing that it wouldn't occur to him to ask the husband for. And that is where the father-in-law davens in shul. Where is his seat? And so the Vilna Gaon recommended that without saying anything, they simply go to shul, and the father-in-law should be very careful as he enters the shul not to walk to his seat, and instead to turn to the son-in-law and motion, you go first. If this man is truly the son-in-law, he will certainly remember where the father-in-law's seat is. From the Sheva Brachas, it's a momentous time in a young man's life, and he would remember exactly where to go. But if he's the lowlife that we suspect he might be, he would never have asked the husband for this information, and he will be at a total loss once it comes to a davar shebikdusha, a thing of holiness. And they indeed proceeded with the test, and the son-in-law, who wasn't, was exposed. Mixed feeling about the ending of the story, of course. It's not exactly happily ever after. It means that the woman remained an aguna. Her real husband had not been identified, but certainly a terrible tragedy is averted. Bottom line is that this is a very sophisticated, creative, and challenging topic to identify whether it's really the husband. Yashar Koach, thank you for joining.